Senior Focus.
Welcome, everyone. I'm Anne-Marie Khoury. I'm your presenter for Senior Focus for this session. And we're in election time, of course. And last week we had an interesting discussion around the finance area in KiwiSaver. It wasn't at all election related, but we're switching back this week to have a look at some of the issues on the table. We had the first leaders debate last night, and I don't know whether any of you watched it, but it'll be very interesting to see, you know, what comes out over the next few days in terms of reactions. And we have with us today Karen Leone, who's the Deputy Chair of Waitemata Local Board in Auckland, and she's also a candidate for the Waikato seat for Labor. So welcome, Karen.
Kia ora. Thank you very much.
Kia ora. And ngā mihi ki a koutou ki a koe. It's great to have somebody who has a pedigree with Tainui, who's actually standing in this seat and standing on a mainstream electoral role position. I think that's quite significant that we've got a Māori woman prepared to do this.
I think I just want to make a little note there that obviously in terms of being on a general seat, I acknowledge all of my whakapapa, which is also Irish and Italian, my surname Leone being Italian, but also yes, I do have whakapapa links to Ngāti Pawa, and Pawa was a brother to Mahuta and lived in Taupiri, so yes, I do have significant links to the Waikato, and I've been working very closely with Nanaia around my campaign down there, and we've got a number of events online as well as in person throughout the Waikato that we will be out attending over this course of the campaign.
Oh, that's fantastic. And I think it's really very telling when we looked at the debate last night, the kind of choices that people have. I mean, are we going forwards into a future that's realistically going to require us to respond to climate change at a much faster pace than we have? Are we going to actually address inequalities, because these are expanding under COVID, not shrinking? And or are we actually trying to turn the clock back and go backwards and invest in what we call solid solutions, but which look very shaky? Things like trickle-down, which we know hasn't actually worked very well.
No, and I agree with you there. I mean, I've been talking to a lot of swing voters across the Waikato who have traditionally been very strong National Party voters, but what they are realising as well in terms of how we can address issues like inequality is that actually we need to have a different approach to the kind of systemic systems that have been put together in the past and work together with iwi. One of the really big issues that a lot of the businesses are saying and the farming sector are saying that they actually really do want to have some good workers that are coming through, because there's issues with employment down there and actually finding some solid workers that they know will turn up on time. But we also know that those workers that are coming from vulnerable families or where there has been a history of domestic violence and so on, in areas like Huntly and Ngarawahia, we have to put wraparound supports together and better programs together to actually make those employment opportunities successful. So, yeah, that's just some of the feedback that we're getting down there around what the concerns have been for some of those long-standing National Party supporters wanting to look at the options of now possibly voting for Labor.
That's very interesting. I think we're at a time where it's this, it's paradoxical. There are traditional positions like invest in the farming community, give them grants to buy machinery and spend 100, you know, if they're going to spend 150,000, National will invest in them. And that might produce jobs in terms of trickle down. On the other hand, Labor is talking the living wage, and we know from lots of research that's been done independently that the living wage is the single most effective strategy if you want to lift families out of poverty. But in itself and on its own, without the wraparound type of support for particular types of problems socially in the community, it possibly won't do enough. And certainly in a time post-COVID, where we can't really say post-COVID because we're not out of it yet and we won't be for some time, but certainly in COVID times, we've got all sorts of pressures on people that lift anxiety and depression rates, and which mean frayed edges for lots of families, lots of conflicts spilling out, and it's more difficult to sustain effort whether you're running a business or whether you're working for someone else. So the wraparound types of supports are going to be really important. Just the living wage on its own isn't enough.
No.
But whether in fact you can put a left-right spin on this, or whether in fact we need to be looking innovatively and saying, well, look, digital commerce is here to stay. It is a way of making money, and it is a successful way. It means we can bring money in from overseas, and we're not actually having to exert a lot of expenditure. I mean, set up a website and build an email list and have some thousands of people that you're communicating with. This is actually brain power. It's not dollar power. So I think there's a lot of scope for, what's the word I'm searching for here? Creating ways to engage people and seeing that this is something that could be for them when they've never really considered it ever before.
Definitely. There's, like you say, there is a lot of scope there and opportunities. So we do need to look at all those different things, especially with this election coming up this year. And I think that the really important thing is that we're planning for the future of our next generations to come. And so, you know, when you brought up that the issue around climate change, that's another really significant issue for Waikato in particular with the farming sector, because we know that, you know, in terms of the waterways, our clean waterways and some of the policies that have been put in place with regard to that, that has had a significant impact on farmers. But it's how do we support them through some of the red tape. I saw that Jacinda was also doing an interview this morning, earlier this morning in Waikato, talking about similar issues on that red tape, and also working on farmers' plans and how we can support them through that, through the fencing and everything else that has got to be put up and established now to have clean waterways, because there are really big issues with the waterways down there in Waikato too.
I think this is a very, very challenging area for us, because clean water has got to be at the heart of health. Whether it's health of animals or health of people. So it's not something you can actually pretend isn't happening or is not a problem when it is. I think that for too long there's been a blind eye turn to a lot of the impact of runoff from the nitrogen-heavy sort of input into farms. And I remember going back, the first successful prosecution of someone putting effluent in the Manukau Harbour was undertaken, and it was more than 20 years ago, and it happened to be Sir Roger Douglas's pig farm that was the culprit, but it was a successful landmark case. Now, we've progressed a lot since then, but I don't think that the councils around the country have been well enough equipped. Now I see government and councils working closer together and waterways being on the program at the local government conferences. Very much an area that Local Government New Zealand's focused its attention on in terms of policy development. So I actually see progress is being made. I think that it possibly isn't a kind of sexy topic that gets into the newspapers much.
No. Yeah, I mean, but it's definitely a reality for, obviously, those in the farming sector down there. And, I mean, aside from that, the main issue really is the employment as well. So the young people that are transitioning from high school down there, you're only getting around 60% of young people actually making it to year 13 or getting through year 13 and going on to further studies. So that's a significantly high number of young people that will either be looking for work or looking for some kind of trades training or training programs. So another big gap I can see, if there were programs put together that did actually support them to go into the farming sector or even into the dairy factory sector, those types of jobs, then you're going to have a lot more success.
Yes, so having a transitioning into employment, having support wraparound for that is going to be really quite vital.
Absolutely, because, I mean, that's a reflection of what the future generations to come, you know, how that will look for the communities across Waikato. Is if you definitely only have around 60% that will be going on to further courses in university, that's really high number of employment that's required.
Mm, indeed. I'm actually also interested that things that didn't come into the debate at all, that possibly will come up into one of the following debates that are coming, because they're going to look into social issues more. But what I'm wanting to see is what the response to the zero suicide platform is from both the leading parties, because there's at the moment a multi-party process whereby they do an online forum at the moment on Wednesdays, and they're doing one tonight online, and it's right across the nation, but there's five key MPs from the major parties, and that includes the main minor parties, and they are actually all sort of presenting their party views about this, but at the same time they're stimulating discussion and reflecting back what are some of the good things that are happening in the community around this.
Yeah, and there are lots of small models. I was at a TEDx presentation on Sunday, and we had one presenter there who's based in the Waikato. He's written a book on his experience, his own experience of depression, and then two others that have put their stories into that book. And what I think is happening quite a lot across the country is that you've got pockets of really good organisations that are doing great things, but how can we have some national standards that really do meet the needs of that group of people that are suffering? And we know that in particular we do have mixed ethnicity, but there's always a high number of young Māori that are represented in that group. So again, we need to really be clear coming into this election, what are the changes that we want to make and that we need to see happen urgently.
Yes, I couldn't agree more. There's a link too with those that are in difficult circumstances, leave home, go on the streets as a way of keeping themselves safe, because they're safer there than they are at home, and they then may be in more difficult troubles further down the track. So that might lead, be a leading factor in some suicides. I'm not saying it's a major thing, but it certainly, it's part of the total picture that's influencing the outlook for young Māori. I also can see, though, that there's even many quite affluent families grappling with suicide. And just recently there's been a spate of suicides within the Indian community in Auckland. And this has really shaken many families because they've thought it happened to somebody else's community and some other ethnicities and not to theirs. And yeah. So they've been really quite shattered.
Yeah, and especially with COVID as well, we know that there's been feedback even on some business owners that have lost their businesses, for example, and there was issues around even farmers in that space that had committed suicide. So you're right, it is going right across the country, and it's something that we need to, we really need to focus on in this election.
I do think that it's important because if we have such high suicide rates, and yes, they're amongst the youth, but we have a very high rate amongst men in their 50s, 50s and into their 60s, and I think quite often with them it's to do with changes, to do with relationship fallout, but also to do with business and economic failure and the sense of perhaps not being equipped to make changes themselves personally, either in how they relate to people or in how they deal with problems or how they deal with depression or the amount of new learning they have to do in order to reinvent themselves into a new economic model.
Yeah. No, it's. I think that definitely that is a big issue with men is that you know, we still have this culture in New Zealand that men have to be burly and they have to be strong, and it's seen as being quite a weak thing to do to talk about your issues unless you're, you know, especially in a lot of the groups of friends that I have, they would only really talk about those things if you're having a beer or something like that. But we have to change the way that people express their feelings and take away some of that previous ideology that men have to be burly and strong and not talk about their problems.
And I do think that the community models in terms of community coming together to solve problems, to provide more support. And we've seen examples in the Hawke's Bay during the drought and where communities driven responses actually made a huge difference to people's well-being. It's something that governments can support. Governments really can't initiate this kind of thing. Community has its own momentum. It's a spiritual energy of the people, and governments have a capacity to get in behind and support, but they can't actually lead that. So it has to be led from individuals within that community. But there has to be the substance there to be able to support the community. It's a kind of chicken and egg, but definitely the community comes first and the government can support or send the right signals of support. I'd like to see more information about how the parties standing on their particular platforms, how they actually understand community.
Yes, and that's definitely something that I think is really important for any politician that's going into that role is, you know, what's their background in terms of grassroots community work that they've done and bringing together communities, because you're absolutely right. The government may have a budget of, I don't know, 100 million that they'll say, look, this is going to go out, but the way that that's managed, I think, And the trickle down of how that is for each individual community would only be achieved if you have targeted funding for each region, and that each region actually do come up, aside from what would be the national plan, but come up with their own regional plan as well, which you'd hope would be led by those that are obviously the community groups and the family centres or community centres and so on, that really have got that experience on the ground of what's happening in their local communities.
Yeah, I think it's really important that money from outside the community doesn't actually end up mitigating against what is already in train and working well, or undermine businesses that end up going bankrupt because they can't compete because a bigger big box entity is getting support from government.
Yeah, and I've got a background in national funding myself, so I absolutely understand how that works in terms of the bigger organisations usually getting the biggest pieces of the pie, and then the smaller organisations that are sometimes doing a lot better work in those spaces don't always get the funding, but they continue to fundraise and survive on the smell of an oily rag because they're passionate about what they do. So it's a really big balance to get the right formula, but we know that bringing communities together is the biggest one. It's probably just been such an ongoing issue in this country that government really needs to find a better way forward on that.
Yeah, I think also in this time of COVID, we have seen many more people working from home, and we haven't actually yet formalise some of the things that are needed for this to work really well. I mean, people are looking maybe at changing their workplace environments and looking perhaps at having less space in their work lease arrangements because people don't come in as often and the spaces are not needed so much. But the community needs space in order for people to gather and have discussions and share ideas, and there needs to be more interaction at a community level, and so that needs to be facilitated well, and councils need to be resourced enough to maintain those facilities adequately, and with their budgets being affected by businesses not necessarily having the rates that they can pay, or people not being able to pay the rates because they've lost their job, or, you know, these sorts of issues, coupled with the fact that transport is going to have holes in the budget as well. I'm not just thinking of Auckland either. It's kind of going right through the country with tourism gutting a lot of the incomes in a lot of areas. There's going to be some sort of need for community support to make sure that a lot of the informal wraparound stuff that happens now can go on happening, that just because charities aren't getting the same take that they were getting, that they don't have to close down.
Yeah, no, you're right. And, I mean, I think a good example of that too is how our homeless community, or our homeless whānau that are based in central Auckland, they have had a really significant wraparound service and have had quite a lot of funding injected to really get them into homes during the COVID period. And what's really important is that that continues post-COVID.
Mm, indeed, because you know, Auckland is a lot more pleasant these days to get around. I mean, you're not having to tread over sleeping bodies on the footpath, and it definitely has changed things, and it's safer for them, and a lot of them are addressing long-term health issues that they weren't able to address at all before. So it's been very productive. A lot will depend on how the housing market goes, and what happens when the subsidies for wages run out. Just, I think there's going to be some tight areas for people because rates are still there and they're going up as per the formula, and the house prices aren't dropping. So the rents won't be necessarily dropping. I mean, there may be less Airbnbs and less tourists coming in for short-term accommodation, but that may free up a little bit more space in the market and the rents may level off a bit. But I suspect we'll see requirements for the heating and insulation and everything else coming on the properties.
That's
still going to have an impact.
Yeah, I was just going to say it's a really good point to bring up around the winter payment bill. I mean, what's your views on that in terms of how that's helping the elderly?
Oh, I know from first-hand experience that people are dreading the end of September because that's when the payment stops. Now, that's $40 a week. And that actually has given people a breathing space. So even though the weather may be starting to warm up this month, they may have used more than the $40 to cover their heating. It was particularly cold in August. And so I think in Auckland, we're one of the coldest Augusts I can remember. So I think that people have found it very, very essential. But at the same time, living without it, it's not going to be easy because it's been a cushion, and suddenly that cushion disappears, and they haven't got any sort of backstop. If they have a sudden emergency, they need to find extra money to go to the doctor or to employ someone to do a job they can't do themselves. They are going to find it difficult without that. I think that it was like a general increase in the super. And for those who live alone, if they add up their electricity, their water and their broadband costs, it's likely to be more than $60 a week. Now, if you actually share accommodation with another person on super, you get $30 a week less. So the living alone allowance is actually $30 a week. But if your actual expenses of living alone are way more than $60, then it obviously becomes more effective for you to share and to live with someone else rather than live on your own. But it may not be the best solution for your mental health or your well-being.
Yeah, no, you're right. It has to be something that obviously, in terms of the support, because I'm sure people have really, you know, I mean, sometimes people may have used that to go towards their food and other costs as well, in addition to covering the heating bill. But it'd be really interesting to get people's feedback on whether they actually believe that they are getting enough money aside from the subsidy in terms of shopping and things like that during the week as well.
I think there's enough evidence being collected that the living alone allowance, if you're a woman and you have to pay people to do jobs because you can't lift things or you're not strong enough to mow grass or to climb ladders and do repairs and things like that, then the mere fact that you live alone, if you don't have family who can do these things and you've got to pay people to do them, if you've got ears or eyes that need actual remedies and props or tools or supports, you need hearing aids or anything like that, this is very expensive and they need replacing again and again, like every 10 years. So if you've got your house needs painting and you've got rates piling up, you're going to be in quite some strife. And so the living alone allowance will not really help. And I know many senior organisations have been advocating for a change in this. So it'll be interesting again when we follow these future debates as to whether this comes up as part of the social issues under discussion. Now, we're reaching the end of our program, so I'd just like to thank you, Karen, for your time and for your energy and ideas, and I wish you well in your campaign.
Thank you so much. Thank you for the interview and have a great day.
Great. Pleased to have had you with us. Thanks.
Get together. together with Senior Focus next Sunday at 5:25pm on Planet FM 104.6 or listen online at any time at planetaudio.org.nz/Senior Focus. And do note, Senior Focus is one word.